Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus on Albany. My guest today is Larry Dudley, and he wrote a book about the 1940 election where the Germans tried to interfere in our election process. So fast forward to today, where Donald Trump has actually asked foreign countries to interfere in the American election. So, Larry, what do you think of all of this stuff?
Oh, I think Fiona Hill's testimony in particular was really devastating to Trump, and I think clarified a lot of the issues that were going on here in an unusual sort of way. Because a lot of this has been muddled about what's really going on. And I think that Hill brought it all back to Putin and Russia. I think it's in background, it's important to remember that Russia has been at war with the Ukraine for 5 years. And she said in her testimony, the Russians have been bringing a broad information effort. For instance, it came out in the New York Times yesterday that the Russians had a very elaborate program to try and blame Ukraine for an intervention in 2016 and not Russia itself. So her point was, of course, that the people who were mainly Republicans who are repeating these comments that somehow the Ukraine intervened in our elections are repeating a Russian narrative that's a false narrative and a very dangerous narrative to our politics and to politics, in fact, all over the world. I think it's important to recognize that this isn't exclusively, or it's not exclusively an American problem. There are a lot of countries that are suffering from Russian interference. And in fact, a lot of people are very concerned about the British parliamentary elections going on right now. Britain is voting on December 12th for a new parliament. And we know, the Russians are probably, if they're trying to put their thumb on that as any way they can, they're using social media. They're trying to whip up divisions. They're trying to spread false narratives, as Fiona Hill reported to the Congress. So I think this is a very scary time. I think Trump is very scared. He's been caught out on some stuff that's very, very bad. And I think in a broad sense, by bringing it back to Russia, and this is one of the failures of the Mueller investigation as I see it, because Mueller thought it was all about Trump. In some ways it is, but in other ways it is not. More also, if Russia intervened in the 2016 election, it doesn't really matter whether Trump knew or collaborated or participated or anything. If Russia intervened and installed him, his presidency is essentially illegitimate, whether Trump did anything or knew anything or not. That really doesn't matter. He didn't have to do anything for that, you see. So I think that this is something that somehow got lost along the way. And I think it's a central point. So when she brings it back to Russian intervention, I think she brings it back to the central issue, which is why I think her testimony was so frightening to Trump and so devastating. And you can see this in the reaction of the Republicans on the committee, who are just, like a lot of them, were just cratered in dismay over the whole thing. And some expressions on, like, Devin Nunn's face and so on were just like grimaces, that they knew how horrible the whole thing really was and how bad it all was.
But, you know, no matter what, it seems like the Republicans are sticking with Trump through thick and thin, and they're not budging an inch. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think there's a clear answer. There's a clear answer to that. And I think of what's going on, and we see this in, like, which are lurking in the background, the investigations of like, the National Rifle Association. I think the Russians have been conduiting money and information to Republican campaigns all over the place. For instance, Rachel Maddow was talking the other night about how they hacked Annette Taddeo's campaign when she ran for Congress in 2016. Somehow they hacked her accounts and they got campaign documents, and her opponent showed up at a debate with the stolen documents and used them against her. She's only running in a state legislative race in Florida. And yet they were hacking into this race, and they were supplying information to her opponent in a state Senate race. So they're penetrating even down that level. So that person who her opponent was got help from Russia. I mean, she's running in the state legislative race. She's not even running nationally for Congress or the White House. So you have this huge effort. So I think there are large numbers of Republicans who have been getting help, either knowingly or unknowingly, from Russia and the Russian intelligence services. So money is flowing through organizations like the National Rifle Association. Information, stolen information, and hacking is just helping a lot of them. And they're doing a lot of this. They're not necessarily doing this to help, per se, to help the Republicans, but just disrupt our entire system. I think they also helped Green Party candidate Jill Stein in 2016. So there's a lot of dimensions to this that are at play all at the same time. But to get back around to your original question, I think that to allow the Republicans to know they're getting help from Russia, and in a sense, Russia owns them. They're complicit in the whole thing too, and they become dependent on Russian help and on Russian money. So the degree to which our elections are being compromised, and indeed elections of democracies all over the world are being compromised, is very significant. And I think this is, as I say, it's not just an American problem. It's going on in a lot of countries. But I think this is why people keep asking, why don't all the Republicans turn on Trump? Well, they can't.
Mm-hmm.
They can't because they're complicit. They know they're getting help from Russia. They know they're getting money. They know they're getting hacked information. They know they're getting that the Russians are coming in and they're attacking various opponents that Russians don't like, whoever they may be. They don't necessarily have to be Democrats. They probably are attacking Republican, like, primary candidates and Congress people who don't necessarily toe the Russian lines. So a lot more complicit, or else they're scared and cowed, and they're not doing anything about it. One of the things I think it's interesting is there's a proposal that when the Senate sits in trial on Trump, and I think they're almost certain that Trump will be impeached at this point, and there will be a trial in the Senate. I think even Trump has now recognized this. There is a proposal that the Senate have a secret vote. So basically people don't know how the senators voted. They would know the ultimate vote. But this is not, the Senate in an impeachment trial, a trial in the Senate after an impeachment, is in fact a jury process. And jurors, we don't get to know generally how jurors vote in a jury. They go into the jury room and they vote in private. And they come out and they announce the verdict. We don't know how they vote. The Senate probably, arguably, should operate the same way any other jury operates, because the Senate, in that case, is a jury. But I think this would protect Republican senators to free them up to go and vote their conscience and do the right thing and not be afraid of Russian intervention. It's a way of getting the process back out from Russian control. Russia, in many ways, is a very weak country. And I think they've discovered that the economy is really a wreck in a lot of ways. The only thing that keeps them afloat is selling oil money. They don't have a lot of products that anybody wants to buy except for military hardware. And I think they've discovered that for relatively small amounts of money, in terms of the big picture, relative to, say, what a national defense budget is or what, say, an advanced fighter plane costs or an aircraft carrier costs or something, that they can go around, they can get this enormous influence and make this enormous impact for a fraction of what you might have to spend on the Navy. So why not do that if you're Russia? I mean, it makes sense from their point of view that they're doing these things. They can get a lot of influence in the world, and they can cause a lot of damage to people they perceive as their adversaries by spending relatively trivial amounts of money in terms of a whole national defense effort on this program of aggression.
I like to read about what went on in the past, and there was a senator from Wisconsin by the name of Joseph McCarthy who accused so many people of being reds and commies and
mm-hmm.
stuff.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So what you're saying to me seems kind of like the same kind of thing where you're saying, oh, all of these people are bought off by the Russians.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is that McCarthyism or is that a known fact?
Well, we do know, and I think the investigations are ongoing, we do know that the Russians channeled a lot of money to the National Rifle Association For instance, Marina Butina was a key figure in all this, who was arrested here in the United States for not registering as a foreign agent and was just very recently expelled back to Russia and has not been heard from since. You have to wonder what happened to her. But, yeah, I think we do know that a lot of money is flowing through various conduits and what's going on. We really, you know, it's all very murky and it's still under investigation. And I think it was important that Fiona Hill and the hearings brought it back to Russia, because I think these hearings are going to continue on for a while. And more of this is going to slowly come out. And, you know, in fact, there are still, out of the Mueller investigation, there are still the various U.S. attorneys in various parts of the country are still engaging in investigations and counterintelligence investigations. And I think we are still yet to hear a lot of that information. It's notable, it's notable that Nancy Pelosi did not assign the principal responsibility in the impeachment process to the Judiciary Committee, as is normal. She assigned it to the Intelligence Committee, which has a greater expertise in these areas, because I think they recognize that the complexity of the case and requires a little bit of special expertise and staff work and so on the intelligence and counterintelligence side of all of this. So I think this is all coming out, but I think a lot of this is just the circumstantial case is extremely powerful of what's going on here. And we do know that, like this whole case and the state Senate race in Florida, they got information that was hacked out by Russians and flowed around. And that's a CBS News report. That's not from some minor, you know, some flaky online news source. That's CBS News, one of the most reliable news sources in the world. So I think we are seeing a lot of this going on, and we're going to hear a lot more about this going down the road. I think we can go on that.
Okay, so if what you're saying is true, if it's factual, not that I dispute factual, do you think it could be happening right here in New York, in the New York Senate races that will take place this coming year?
Well, we don't know. Where it's all going. I mean, I think like in legislative races here in New York, they probably would not innovate in state legislative races because, you know, the Democrats, in one party basically, it doesn't actually in a sense matter which one in this particular case. But one party has really dominant control. They were going to intervene in places that are swing states or can go one way or the other. Like that's Florida. So they're intervening in Florida, you see, because they can make a difference there. You know, interviewing, say, in New York or California for the Democrats, or say in, I don't know, Oklahoma or Idaho for the Republicans, would not change anything because they're those parties are dominant in those states. So they're going to go where they can make a difference, and they're being very selective about where they intervene. So they're going to places like, you know, swing states like Florida. They're going to places like Pennsylvania or Wisconsin and so on, like they did the last time around. So I don't think on the state legislative race level we're going to see much here. On the congressional level, who knows? That's hard to say. Certainly, like I live in the 21st district, which is represented by Elise Stefanik, and she took a leading role in the hearings, criticizing them, the witnesses and so on, interrogating them. Bringing up a lot of spurious issues like who the whistleblower was and so on that you know aren't really central to the investigation. Sort of a distraction thing. Are they intervening for here? Probably not, but who knows? I think Stefanik raises plenty of money anyway. One reason being is the Republicans have very few young women. They put her out front for a reason. They didn't want women witnesses like Voinovich or Fiona Hill being interrogated by a big rural older white men. The optics of that are very, very bad. So I mean, they don't have a lot of figures like her. So they need her very badly, and they have a big investment in her, which is one of the reasons why I think the race here in NY21 is going to be really intense this year.
You think it'll have people from all over the country, politicos from all over the country, will have their eyes on New York 21?
Yes, they do. They already do. We know they already do. People are putting a lot. I mean, Tedra Cobb raised $1 million after Stefanik's performance the previous Friday. in the hearings. Mm-hmm. As long as she raised in 48 hours, she raised $1 million, and more money is still coming in. MoveOn.org put out an appeal. They raised $50,000 for her. So, yes, a lot of national groups and a lot of national attention is coming into the NY21 race. And to the cop and to Stefanik. Stefanik went on Sean Hannity and claimed she raised $500,000 in 2 hours, although we don't know how many donors she had. One point I would make about that is that apparently, and reported in the papers today, that Tedra Cobb had 60,000 individual donors. So those donations are pretty small. She doesn't have a lot of PAC money, whereas Stefanik has had a lot of PAC money, and she raises most of her money out of the district. So a lot of that $500,000 could be PAC money, and we won't really know what that means until we see how many donors she has. That could be quite a while before that gets reported. So that's how many donors you have is a key thing, because it shows the depth and width of your support that you have, as opposed to, say, a small number of rich people or corporations.
Right.
Key point about Cobb's money also, too, because those people are all mostly small donors. Tedra can go back to those people again and again and raise more money. Whereas if you get some funder who maxes out for Stefanik, Stefanik can't go back to them. But when somebody only gave $20, those people are probably good for another $20 or maybe $50 or $100 before the next November. So that's not, we're not looking at $1 million there for Cobb. We're looking at a much larger sum ultimately, because Tedra can very easily go back, and because she has all their names and addresses and emails and just, you know, appeal to them again, you know, I need some more money and raise more. So that's going to redound to her benefit for a long time to come.
Okay, let me ask you this. The hearings, the impeachment hearings, closed this week. And this talk about an actual impeachment sometime early next year. Now, if that's, and it's being called for by Nancy Pelosi, right?
Oh, that's correct, yeah.
Okay.
It would, the Congress at some point, the House of Representatives at some point is going to have to, the Intelligence Committee will make a report. It may go to the Judiciary Committee first, and then it will go to the full House, and the full House will debate it, and then they will vote. And it will go to the Senate, and the Senate will have to basically sit as a trial court.
Okay. Here's the thing. The United States Senate, there's a lot of senators who are running for president on the Democratic line. You know, you have Pete Buttigieg, who's he's a mayor, and he's rising in the polls. So do you think that the candidates who are in the United States Senate, I don't think they're very happy about doing a impeachment hearing right when Iowa and New Hampshire starts. What do you think?
Probably not, because I think that the whole process is tending to suck up all the oxygen, as the phrase goes, right now. So it tends to, the fact that it's getting so much attention tends to benefit the front runners who are better known, whereas people who are at the back of the pack or a little farther down aren't getting the attention they may need to break out. It's hard to say how much support Buttigieg has. There's been some controversy. It's been pointed out that one poll showed him in a much stronger position in Iowa, but then it turned out the poll also polled Republicans. So, of course, that doesn't mean very much, because Republicans don't get to vote in the Democratic caucus. So it's not an open primary or open caucus, you see. So it's hard to say. I think a lot of these polling numbers, they swim around a lot. We're going to see them swim around a lot. But I think it does tend to – the fact that the impeachment is getting so much attention – does tend to cement in the position of the front runners, which tends to be Biden and Sanders and Warren and possibly now Buttigieg, with Harris a little bit farther down. So there's a host of other candidates like Amy Klobuchar, who actually is a very good candidate, but doesn't seem to be getting a lot of support, or Cory Booker. They're all around 2% or so. They're not. It makes it very, very hard for candidates like that to break out.
Now, your opinion, in the event of a Senate trial Well, all of the primaries and caucuses are going on. Do you think this ultimately will help Joe Biden? He's no longer a sitting senator.
Oh, that's an interesting point. That could be. I don't know, although he seems to be having an increasingly harder time. I think the last debate hurt him very badly because he's messed up over being endorsed by the only black senator, and missing another black senator, was African-American senator, was standing right next to him practically. This was looked pretty bad. I think that was pretty damaging. It's hard to say. We'll see what the polls emerge over on Biden in the next week or two. It'll be interesting to see.
Mm-hmm. So nobody's got crystal balls. I don't have one. You don't have one. But
no.
From today on, how do you think this whole thing's going to play out?
The primary race or the impeachment or both?
Impeachment stuff.
Well, I think it's a foregone conclusion that the House will impeach him. It will go probably in the new year to a trial in the Senate. That's hard to say. I think right at the moment we would have to say that the votes in the Senate probably aren't there, although there is talk about a secret ballot, and it'd be interesting to see how that would change things. I would note that the House can continue investigating, and they can do superseding indictments, superseding articles of impeachment. More also, as they keep investigating, they can add new articles of impeachment and send them up to the Senate, which the Senate would then have to consider as well. So as more emerges, they may have more. I think jumpstarting the process simply on Ukraine does make a lot of sense. But how that all plays out in the long run, there's just, as you say, no one has a crystal ball, no one knows. I think if they had a secret ballot and more stuff turns out about the Russian intervention, the possibility of an actual conviction does go up. But who knows what the odds are. I think they're probably not very good at the moment that he would be convicted, but we'll have to see.
You know, I remember watching a interview between Anderson Cooper and Anderson Cooper and Howard Stern. And Howard Stern made no bones about the fact that he thought Donald Trump ran for president as a publicity stunt. And I remember reading that he was shocked when he won. His wife was upset. Okay, so if Howard Stern thinks it's a publicity stunt and he was really shocked and unprepared to be president of the United States, why is he fighting so hard to keep this job when he's having, I believe, not a, his performances, I would say it was kind of lackluster. Why do you think he's fighting so hard?
Well, I think there's probably, excuse me, I have a frog in my throat. I think there's probably two reasons. One is just ego and his own self-image. He just can't bear losing something. He's always sort of been like that. He's always inflated his own worth and value. And so it's just personal ego reasons. He's just going to do that. The other, I think, is there are all these investigations going on. For instance, Trish James, the New York Attorney General, is investigating for various crimes and so on. And as long as he's in the White House, he has immunity. Some immunity from those investigations, but if he were actually removed from office or resigned, they could take him to court right away. He might wind up in jail. Getting reelected to a second term would run out the statute of limitations on a lot of the things that he is charged with. So it decreases the chance that he would go to jail. I think it's a real fear on his part. So I think they're trying to basically run out the clock on a lot of stuff. And he can be reelected, he will run out the clock on a lot of things. But if he isn't, if he is impeached or he isn't reelected, he excellent chance he's going to go to jail. I mean, he's just so many criminal things he's done, you know.
Now, you're a student of history. You wrote a book about the election of 1940. And you and I did not graduate from college last week. Do you remember a time in the history of the United States was this tumultuous?
Well, yeah, I think if you go back to the Civil War, certainly was like that. Yes. And that was worse. We actually started shooting at each other, you know, at that time. So, I mean, we've gone through some really bad patches in the past. I do think that there was a really bad situation in the country in 1940 with the isolationists. There were a lot of pro-fascist people, you know, and we eventually were able to defeat them. I think the late 60s was very bad, too. I do think this is quite a lot worse. This is quite a lot worse than Watergate. But I think we, as a nation, we've been through worse. Certainly, you can't argue that this is all worse than the Civil War. I just don't think that's a tenable. I mean, okay. The country was almost destroyed by all of that. You know, I mean, 600,000 people died. We're so far from that kind of eventuality. You know, I don't think you can really compare them. So I think that if we can just get past certain kinds of things, and I think one of the things we really have to deal with is a new information culture. Where, you know, people are, where lies and propaganda can be spread on social media in a way that was not possible beforehand. If we can mm-hmm. figure out how to deal with that, I think we'll get through this and be okay. But we do have problems, and we sort of have to reinvent some democratic institutions, I think, for the internet age, where changes have to be made. For instance, I do think that Facebook has become a subversive and toxic sort of influence on our society, and it needs to be turned into a public utility. Sort of like the TVA or, you know, public municipal utility or something.
Oh, wow.
So that they
okay.
can't. I mean, basically they're just parodying Russian propaganda and they don't care. And imagine if Facebook had existed in 1940, I mean, Hitler could go on there and put out propaganda about, you know, he could put little 30-second things on there. And since they claim they're not a news organization, they don't have to verify the truthfulness of anything. Hitler could go on Facebook and spread all the lies he wanted to. So we're not looking at, you know, we have to look at that kind of thing and consider, you know, how do we deal with that? I think we have to restate the fairness doctrine in broadcasting so that Fox News basically isn't an arm of any particular campaign. It's not just Trump's. I mean, it could go one mm-hmm. way, it can go the other way. I think we have to realize that. So that a television network has to have some honesty and neutrality, and if you attack someone else has a right to respond. You know, we've got to, there are things we can do and we've done in the past. We have to sort of revive that, like the Fairness Doctrine.
Mm-hmm. So, in the closing moments, why don't you give your book a plug again?
Oh, well, New York Station is out now. Came out last year. From Blackstone Publishing, and so available in our area here. It's about it's about two true stories. The Germans really did try to intervene in the 1940 presidential election and block Roosevelt, and the British intelligence really did set up an operation here in the United States to fight Nazi subversion. My new book, the sequel to New York Station, comes out in January. It's released January 21, and the hero Roy Hawkins goes to Mexico in that story, and I'm having the big launch event, and all your listeners invited to the North Shore Bookstore on January 25th for a big launch party. And please come on down. We'll have a nice night, and we'll talk all about both New York Station and the new book, The Hungry Blade.
And that's going to be in Saratoga Springs?
That's the North Shore Bookstore in Saratoga Springs, right in downtown Saratoga.
Okay, great. So I'm looking forward to having you back on to talk about your new book and also talk about the ongoing saga in Washington. So you've been listening to Larry Dudley. If you like the show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, download on your smartphone, subscribe to iTunes if you have a comment about the show, hashtag Focus on Albany. And I'm going to give a little plug for myself. I'm part of the low power station in Albany, WCAA, and I've been afforded the opportunity to do a couple of shows on the air. And one of the shows that I'm going to be doing is called Women Who Inspire. So anybody out there who would like to be on the show or know somebody, an inspiring woman, please like Women Who Inspire on Facebook. Thank you. Have a great day. Thank you, Larry. We'll talk again.
Thank you. Bye.